Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz, sitting here with Fernando Carrillo of Ragtop Ferns Barbecues, Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
How's it going? Thank you.
Good. So we are sitting here, Belly of the Beast, about, what, half an hour after service?
Yeah, just about.
You're not lying when you say show up at noon.
Yeah, it's done by, like, within the hour, it's done.
It's done. It's, the first time we came when we showed up at, like, 11:45, when I saw the big hand and little hand touch on the clock, I was like, oh, crap, like, he's not joking.
No, yeah, it's I'm pretty serious about the whole showing up at 12. We're like, now I'm getting, like really swamped with, like, pre-orders to where, like, I don't, I don't even have a chance anymore. It just got worse.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that rise in popularity, but let's start at the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
We're in this exact same neighborhood right here in Los Angeles. In Koreatown, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and what was the food vibe like growing up? What was your food vibe growing up?
Really, I think the food vibe around here, or like in the house, has always been just like traditional Mexican food.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mom cook, dad cook, everyone cooks?
Just mom.
Just mom?
Yeah.
What was her specialty?
I think her thing was pozole.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm. That was the one thing that I think she was like always... if I could say one thing that was her dish, it would probably have to be the pozole.
You know, especially in Los Angeles, more than a lot of cities in America, making food at home, selling it on the street, that has been a tradition that's been going on for a while. How did that influence you? When did you start to notice that growing up?
You know what? I didn't really notice it too much as a kid or even growing up. I think I've seen a recent increase in it just within this year, I think, is when I actually... It's got very noticeable recently.
Yeah. I mean, the quote-unquote underground part of the underground food scene is not so much underground with, like, social media and things like that.
Yeah.
But Los Angeles has been pretty kind to people saying, like, okay, here's my dish. I'm going to sell it on this corner. I'll be here every day.
Yes and no.
Yes and no?
Yes and no, because I have seen, like, the same taco dude in the same spot for years. And then there's the times that you've seen, like, at least I have, you know, like the fruit stand guys or like the corn guys or whatever getting their stuff confiscated or just thrown out. So it's like I've seen both sides.
What do you think what do you think makes it go one way or the other? Why do you think one guy gets to stay there for 30 years or enough to be like where you can yell blue corn tortilla lady? And she pops up.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, what makes you think that who gets to stay and who gets kicked out?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know why some people get to slide and some don't.
Yeah.
It's weird. I guess it just probably depends on maybe the law enforcement that's in the area or who they feel I'm picking on that day or I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're right. I don't know. It's hard to say. But I have seen... that happened more to, like, the fruit guys. The fruit guys or, like, the dudes that are selling, like, the raspados, the shaved ice.
Yeah.
Or the corn guys. It's mainly those guys that I've seen. I think only once. I'm sorry. Only once I've actually seen a taco stand get confiscated.
That's once. Crazy.
Just once.
That's once. So that's, I mean, for living here your entire life, that's not too bad.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So, grew up Mexican food, and... you were also into the lowrider scene, too.
Oh, yeah, that's always been a part of me since I was a kid.
How'd you get into that? What was that like? What was the food around that scene like?
You know what? I think it's the same. Because the majority of it is all minorities. It's honestly, like, the lowrider scene is mainly minority. It's a lot of, like, African-American, Mexican, or, like, Latinos or whatever. So it's like... the food is pretty much the same. So the food is either Mexican.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, like hamburgers, hot dogs.
Sure.
And you know, I guess a mix of the African-American stuff. Like you got like maybe the soul food, however you want to call it, like chicken and stuff like that.
Is that the first time you started having barbecue? Like ribs and chicken and things like that?
I started having barbecue. If I could think about the first barbecue spot I ever went to.
Yeah.
Was probably... a place called the Barbecue King, or the Real Barbecue King. It was on Temple, by where the Orsini buildings are at now.
Okay, and what year was this?
I was like in middle school. This was probably like early 2000s.
So like early 2000s, the concept of LA barbecue was like Bloodsoe's.
Or, I didn't even know about Bloodsoe's at the time.
But you know, but like very, it was like a... just not even really a thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, here's a restaurant that does barbecue.
Yeah.
But did barbecue stick, did it hit then? Or like, what was your journey into sort of barbecue and smoked meats?
Honestly, the way how I kind of transitioned into it or how I started getting more into it was, I first started just like, I had a regular like little Weber grill. So I would just grill steaks, like the typical, again, Mexican style.
Sure.
Like grilling, so you have like, you know, carne asada, you have chicken, the chorizos and stuff like that.
And that's, so like a, that's more of like a quick grilling, right?
Yeah, it's more like of a, like, there's different terms in the, like, barbecuing or grilling. Like, some people say, oh, that's not barbecue, or it's, if you want to get real nitpicky about it.
But, if you want to be one of those people.
Yeah, if you, yeah, but I'm not that guy. So, it's like, that was pretty much what I started with, and then I think I transitioned, like, one day I think I just said, oh, I'm going to do ribs, and then, like, I just did them. I'm like, wait, they didn't come out right. I'm like, there must be a better way to do it. And then I was like, oh, well, there's barbecue. Let's see how they do it. It's like, no, I don't think they do them. And then you hear, like, people, oh, they boil them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, God, no. I guess it's like a cardinal sin now.
I've had that once.
No, you do not want to do that.
So. I had that once, and I was like, it's weird because, like, it's like, yeah, I get some soft, but then they finish it on the grill. It's like a trick.
Yeah.
It's like sort of like a trick. You're like, oh, okay.
No, it's not. So it's like, you don't want to do that. So...
But how did you make that jump, though? Because obviously now that you have the smoker, the legendary Lucifer smoker, that is, if you ever can't find Ragtag, you just look for the awesome smoker on the side street.
Yeah, it's right there. You can't miss it.
You cannot miss it. But, like, how did you start making that transition from your classic Weber grill, like, working your way up to smoking?
Well, it started with the same Weber grill, too. So I figured, okay, that's when I started looking into it. I'm like, okay, well, it's not cooked the same. You have to cook... indirect, well, for the application I had.
Yeah.
So then I started setting up that same Weber to cook indirect, and I was like, okay, well, let me do it like this. I'm like, okay, you got to cook it for hours. It has to cook this way. You have to use wood, and you have to check it every so often. Not all the, you know, not like how when you're doing regular carne asada or whatever, you're like flipping it every other minute or something like that.
I mean, I guess my question is, in switching into that longer cooking time, what made you want to devote that time? Because it's like, it's a matter of like 30 minutes sometimes to 3, 6, 12 hours.
Yeah. I think it was because I started figuring out I liked that better.
Yeah.
And I liked it more. And then I was just, I'm very, when I do stuff, I have a very mechanically inclined approach to things.
Does that go back to the cars and the agriculture?
So it's like, I use the same... concept or the same train of thought into that, so it's all attention to detail.
So with that detail, with that shift, how long did it take from you to changing your barbecue game for other people to start to notice that, like, oh shit, Fernando's like doing something, let's go to his place, let's go eat?
I think I was doing it for a while, probably like at least a good 2 years prior to doing the setup I have now.
Yeah.
And then...
for friends
and
family.
It got a little more serious and serious. And I think... if I were to say how long it took me to kind of get it the way I liked... I mean, you can never, like, get settled on one thing. I like to keep learning and learning. And I like how you could always do something better.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, the traditionalist or whatever.
Sure.
To where, like, if you do it one way and that's it. No. If you could do something better, why not? Mm-hmm. If you could switch something to that you think would work better for you, then why not? So I'm all for that. But I think it took me about a good 2-3 years. And I think I still learn every now and then. You always learn something new.
Yeah, I mean, you know, arguably your best brisket is like the last one you cooked. Or your best, right? Like you're always improving. Now I know that you had something where you make your own improvements and you make your own... your barbecue your own, but there is still a baseline of like smoked meat, cooked meat, the way how tender it is and things like that, right?
Yeah.
So it took you, what, a couple years to feel comfortable about that. How did you let starting the at-home, making it, start shifting to more of like, maybe I could sell this?
It all started, I think, like, that started when, prior to when I had this set up with this smoker, I had a smaller smoker that my girlfriend gave me for my birthday once. Because my old Weber was already kind of like on its last leg, so it's.
I mean, they take a beating, right?
Yeah.
It takes a beating when it's
that
hot.
And I was using it like every weekend. That's the thing. It was every weekend, every weekend, every weekend, every weekend, every like spare minute I had, I was doing that. So it was wearing its. It was already showing already time that it needed a new one, and my girlfriend bought me another one. So, I started inviting friends. I'm like, hey, look, check this out. I'm doing this, and you know, we started kind of like I was using them like as guinea pigs.
Yeah.
To testing it out and doing all that. So they started telling me, hey, man, like, why don't you sell this stuff? Like, it's pretty good. Like, you should probably sell it.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I was like, I don't want to sell it. I don't care to do that.
Like, yeah.
It's not my thing. I don't want to. And eventually, I guess they suckered me into it, and I finally said, okay, I'll do it. Why not?
All right, well, we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to talk about those early days, and then I would say the rise into you being one of the faces of the underground barbecue scene here in L.A. We have a musical track coming up from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm with Fernando Carrillo at the, I would say, on its way to be legendary underground barbecue, Ragtop Fern barbecue in Los Angeles. In, we could say Koreatown.
Koreatown. Yeah, you could say safe, it's Koreatown.
Koreatown. Not the barbecue you think of when you think of Koreatown, but its own. It just happens to be barbecue that's in Koreatown. Yeah. So, early days, getting started, you know, your friends been getting barbecue for free, and they're like, oh, people should pay for this. Were they like, oh, wait, you want me to pay for this too now? Or, like, how did you get your first customers?
The first customers, it was just, once they kind of put that in my head that I should sell it and I should sell it, I was like, okay, cool. So I just, same setup, outside my place mm-hmm. and everything. And I would literally, anybody that passed by, like, hey, I'm selling barbecue. Hey, I'm selling barbecue. I was waving down everybody and anybody that was passing by.
You got like the sandwich board, you're out at the corner.
No, I was literally out front, anybody that passed by, hey, you want to buy some barbecue? Hey, you want to buy barbecue? Hey, you want to buy, anybody that passed by. That's how I started off.
And how did that go?
I had a few people that would stop and were like, oh, okay, cool, let me try it. Or like neighbors that were just like, oh, okay, well, we'll support you. We'll get some of your stuff. And then I had people that were like, oh, no, I don't eat meat, or, oh, I'm vegan, oh, I'm vegetarian, because I have a lot of...
Well, you're in LA. Everyone's got a lot of veggie and vegan.
So I had a lot of those. So I was just like, all right, cool, whatever. But it literally started off waving down and flagging down everybody that passed by if they wanted to buy barbecue.
How soon did you get up on social media?
The social media thing, I think, blew up once I started getting, like, my circle of friends over, and they were taking pictures and they were sharing it, and then it just started, it just like snowballed effect after that. They would share, and then other people would share, and then we would invite more friends over. It was just a circle of friends that started sharing, and that's how it got to where it's at.
What was the first big tipping point, or talk about that first day when you realized something was happening outside of your friends? Are you waving people down?
I think that started when Eater LA did the...
Farley?
Yeah.
Shout out to Farley. Good old Farley.
Yeah.
That guy has got a nose.
Yeah.
And an eye like no other.
When he came down, you know, we chatted and we hung out and everything, and then...
And did he hear about it through Instagram?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And then he was living in the area at the time, so he's like, hey, you're in the area, I heard about you, and here I am.
And then he posted, and like, what was the first day of service like after it went up on Eater?
It's funny because I didn't even know it was up online.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, I get all these notifications and messages, and my phone is like blowing up like there's no tomorrow. And I'm just like, what the hell's going on? And then they're like, oh yeah, we saw your article. I'm like, in my head, like, what article are you talking about? And then Farley's like, oh yeah, I made an article, I published it, it's out. I was like, okay, yeah, that explains why.
Yeah, dude, next time, I'm so appreciative. Give me a heads up next time. Need to buy a few more ribs. And so then what has it been like? Because obviously then that snowballs. I mean, that's, you know, arguably how I first heard about it. How does that then change your service and your approach to it?
Well, I didn't have to wave down anybody anymore.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
They came, they all just showed up here. I didn't have to, and hey, you guys want to? And it went from doing like four ribs a weekend or whatever to like more than that, including briskets and pork shoulders and the chorizos and all kinds of stuff. I pretty much fill that thing up to capacity every weekend.
I mean, you're at the point now where you could probably get another smoker, right?
I probably should.
You probably should. So, what is that like? And I know we said, like, quote-unquote underground. Uh-huh. And I guess technically it is not in a restaurant, but you're pretty well-known now, right? Yeah. If someone were to say, list, like, the top five barbecue places in L.A., there's a good chance that your name's going to come up.
Oh, there is.
So
I think Eater has a list out. Yeah. They just recently revamped the list.
Yeah.
And I'm on that list. I think I'm on the top, like, five or something.
Exactly. So what's it like to go... I mean, what are the struggles? Obviously the success is you can sell your meat, you can get on a smoker, but like, what are some of the struggles that come with that?
The fact that at the beginning stages of it, you were just like, damn, like, nobody's buying this.
Yeah.
Like it seemed like a good idea at the time. You're like, I don't see how I could not sell this.
Yeah.
And then you're just sitting there, and you're sitting there, no one shows up, and then there was times that literally nobody would buy anything. And
but now...
Now it's just like I can't even keep up with the amount of people that message me or contact me that they want to get some stuff.
I mean, is that tough, though? Because you want everyone to have your food.
I want everybody to try it. I would like for everybody to try it, but it's hard to really, accommodate everyone. It really is.
I mean, the good thing about this type of food and sort of barbecue culture is that everyone knows there's a limited amount.
Yeah.
And it's sort of on them to get here.
Yes.
So are people pretty understanding if they get there and there's nothing available?
Well, yeah. Yeah, they're actually, super cool about it. Like, I'll straight up tell them, hey, I'm sorry I sold out. Or I'll tell them, hey, I got a list, let me go in order, as in a timely fashion that I can, I don't want to undercut anybody. So I figured, this person messaged me first. So I try to go as orderly as possible. And, I tell them, hey, sorry, someone else just literally bought this or I'm sold out of everything. So I try to really accommodate everyone as much as I could.
So what advice do you wish you had had starting out or that you would want to give to somebody who says, and not necessarily barbecue, but I want to do underground breakfast sandwiches, something like that. If I want to open up my house, I don't have people over, I'm going to start that way. What advice would you give them?
Or
what
advice?
Be patient?
Be patient. Patience, I think, is key. Patience, I think, you have to be very patient to do barbecue.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty much like a waiting game. So, that being said, you have to be very patient after with what you have and if people would be able to, get it or not. So I think if you're just understanding that you're not going to strike it big right away, you're going to have to start off slow. You're going to have to work your way up. And, I think that's honestly how the only thing I would say probably as far as advice, just if they're going to do something or if they want to do something like that, go ahead and do it, but be patient. That's the one thing I would say.
So now that you have publicity and you're on making the top list and people come over the neck, what do you start thinking about when it comes to the future? Like, what do you start thinking next? And is there a reality versus dreaming over a couple of beers or things like that where you're Ragtop Fern, every corner of America and every state, or what do you really think you want to do?
Honestly, I wouldn't want to have that whole on every corner type of deal.
Yeah?
I like what I have. I'm happy with it. I don't want to have a Ragtop Ferns in every state and every city and all that. I like to do it like this because I have control over everything.
Mm-hmm.
I could keep quality the way I like it.
Yeah.
Because once you start going big like that, restaurants and all that, it's hard. You can't. It's impossible. It's impossible.
I mean, that's why when you look at a lot of the people down in Texas or a lot of the barbecue places, there's one spot.
Yeah.
And then any place that isn't, it's an offshoot, usually isn't as good.
Yeah. So, I think the only thing, I wouldn't quit my job. I mean, I do this for fun.
Yeah.
I don't do it because... I want to be the next barbecue sensation, but...
Well, that may not be up to you.
Okay.
That may not be up to you.
Okay, well, this was like an after effect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, a little notoriety is always good,
but... Yeah, it never hurts.
It never hurt anybody, but, I don't do it for the popularity. It's not it happened.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to get like this. It just happened, but... I want to do it just to where it's still for fun. Maybe expand a little more, maybe a trailer. Maybe
yeah.
A truck would probably, a full-blown, probably lunch truck would probably be much, too
yeah.
much. I think maybe a mobile trailer.
So that you could go do events, do catering?
Yeah, just different events, or just maybe stick to catering. I don't know. I really don't. I want to do it to where I still have fun. I don't want to get frustrated with it or to where it burns me out and I
yeah.
lose it. And you lose that
no, but
drive
it's,
to do it anymore.
It's nice to see every once in a while when you're like, I got a lowrider convention on a Sunday. You guys are out of luck. You
yeah.
know? It's good to know that you can have that freedom still. And then people are like, ah, oh, damn, all right, next weekend. Now, with this community getting bigger and bigger, and as you said, you feel like in the last year it's been this crazy amount of more people getting this in this game. What's the community like? Do you guys all know each other? Like, are you guys all friendly? Or is it like a healthy competition between the different underground barbecue places?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, like, we all communicate. We're all friends.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's competitive. Like, everyone, it's
that barbecue. Yeah, barbecue's always been competitive. Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that competitiveness in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice when you see, you're like, oh, my name's above you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so finally, you know, you cook the brisket, you cook the ribs, you cook chorizo. What is your favorite? Why?
Ribs.
Yeah?
I think, I don't know, I'm a pork person. I love pork. Like brisket and beef ribs and all that, chorizo, they're all good. But I love pork. Pork is like my thing.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. This is so awesome that you're doing this. A lot of people talk about doing it, and you're actually doing it.
Yeah.
If people want to come find you, if people want to, in real life and online, where can they go?
Through Instagram. Instagram's the easiest way to get a hold of me. I'm always on that.
And what's the handle?
It's Ragtop Friends Barbecue.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. Thank you for making our Saturdays and Sundays so smoky meat-filled.
I try.
We have a track from the archives coming up, and then a live performance next on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back. We have Grimstreaker live in studio. Welcome to the show, all five of you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
There's what a up? Very appropriate Grim Reaper eating pizza t-shirt that is made. Does it say pie till I die?
Yes, it does.
Oh, my God. So that actually might be the most relevant t-shirt in the entire 8 years that have happened. So thanks for coming. It's really great to see all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Do you want to maybe go around the room since there's a myriad of you and introduce yourselves? Shout it out.
I'm Bill. I play bass.
I'm Pial. I play drums.
Dan. I'm on guitar.
Amelia. I shriek.
Micah. Guitar.
And I know the two of you from all over the years, which is always rad. So good to see you two again.
You too.
And whatever incarnation it is of music. How did you form as this amazing group of musicians?
We met on Craigslist.
As one does.
The adult personal section.
Yeah, of course. Exactly.
It's a trick question because I already knew that.
Yeah. No, we're all from various bands that sort of came together. What's our story?
Yeah, mostly through like just the local music community. Yeah. Bill and Micah were doing a music video for my other band. And then...
Which band was that?
Dino Walrus. And then me and Pial used to play in another like kind of power pop punk band a couple years ago too, and you know, we just kind of all started throwing this together a little drunkenly, and then we grabbed Amelia.
Well, I got really jealous. I want to be in a new band, and Dan was like, okay, well, you can like audition, I guess.
did you really have to audition?
How
did that go? What did you have to sing?
Oh, I nailed it.
No, I'm obviously, because you're standing here.
It was like train of thought, just like yelling.
It wasn't like, I'm going to be performing Susie and the Banshees for you today.
No, I literally
like, should have made her do
I
that,
I would be
though.
Totally into that. We just bonded over a love of like 70s and 80s punk, hardcore, and there's not a ton of bands in this particular scene that do this, so...
Yeah, I mean, the sound is really interesting because there's this, you know, there's the 80s stuff and then there's also the 70s that come from New York and D.C. and L.A. How did you decide to take arguably the best elements of it and merge it together and not also while sounding like you're just kind of playing on the past?
Sure. I mean, I think it's just, like, having a broad spectrum of influences and just feeling like there's certain things that I'm not really seeing in, like, music today. The other thing, too, is, like, I'm from L.A., so I started to feel, like, after being here a few years, like, a little nostalgia for, like, certain parts of, like, just, like, surf and skate culture from there, but it's obviously, like, non-existent nowadays. So, like, trying to bring that back into, like, music or something creative that I'm doing. And then I think, like, each of us have, like, our own, like, specific, like, influence or, like, thing that kind of twists it just, like, a little bit further. And then just, I feel like, just ends up being whatever it is.
Yeah.
Who were some of the bands that you brought to the table as reference points when you were writing your first round of songs?
I'd probably say, like, when we were just even talking about being a band, I was like, let's do something like Black Flag.
Yeah, Adolescence.
And like the Dead Kennedys.
The Dead Boys.
Yeah, and like, yeah, maybe like from the 70s stuff, like the Dead Boys for sure.
Yeah.
And then when I joined, it was like X. And
yeah,
then
definitely
like
X.
Karen-O kind of, like early Karen-O.
X-Ray Specs, like, Slits,
yeah.
Like even White Lung, like more modern stuff.
Definitely, so like a lot of
yeah, like modern stuff, I feel like I really love, like, a lot of us love, like, A Place to Bury Strangers or, like, kind of bands like that. And then I definitely, like, from my other band have a lot of, like, and Amelia, too, like, shoegaze influences and stuff like that, like, which it's not, like, super apparent, but I think, like, with a couple things we, like, try to, like...
Flourishes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's always interesting when you find bands that, like, oh, yeah, I'm into, like, Latin jazz.
Yeah,
a hardcore
yeah.
band, and then you're like, oh, actually, you know what, I can kind of hear that now that you say it. It's like buried super deep, but like the intentions and the emotions that come through that music that otherwise are not in any of the bands that reference it, that kind of come and you can actually hear it. And definitely during soundcheck, I heard so much shoegaze stuff.
Yeah.
Just looked at my feet the entire time.
I mean, I have to do that. Every moment.
You want to do that while also, like, moshing.
Yeah. Actually, that's the most difficult part is, like, trying to shoegaze and then, like, move around and, like, jump around like a punk band. It's impossible. This shit breaks.
You can't go too far from your pedals, man. Yeah.
I mean, that's the creative constraints that we give ourselves to make new art.
Right.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
Our shoegaze hit, Tina's.
about a local restaurant.
Tina's is about, local diner. Local diner just around the corner from Roberta's, called Tina's, which is you'll never see open unless you're out and about at like 3 a.m.
Perfect. Well, here we are with Grimstreaker live on Snacky Tunes. I think most of our listeners would be surprised to know that you put out an EP this summer that was 4 songs and clocked in under 10 minutes. I think they would be shocked at that. How did Girl Minority come to pass? Where did you record it? What's the story?
We recorded it at a Diamond City studio with Ayad Aladami, Joel Wittenberg. Two great producers and now buddies, super good buddies of ours.
Yeah, Diamond City Studios is an amazing space. We tracked live, did it in, a week?
Yeah.
And what was the writing process? I mean, you guys are not a particularly old, you're new. You're new as a group.
Yeah, definitely.
So what did the process come? Was it, I don't want to say stream of conscience, but was it written in studio? Were you prepped before? Did it kind of come together in there?
Oh, we definitely had like all of that done before. I think, you know, our first like spurt of like writing music, we wrote a lot of songs, and it was just about like patience with like putting out a single, seeing like where it lands, and then like trying to work on something small like an EP. Yeah, and then just like going for it.
Yeah, songs really usually start with a riff someone brings to the table, and then Amelia just sort of figures out something to put over it, and then we attach it all. And
yeah, but I think the record is pretty close to what we do live. I think that was one of the goals.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always the most disappointing thing when you see a band that just rips live, and then you get their record and you go, what happened?
Yeah.
It's like,
I know.
I remember, this is not the case anymore, but when I saw The Gossip years ago, it took them like a few records to kind of figure out how to get the live sound.
I remember there sounded very like sort of processed and clean.
And then they did Movement. But I remember seeing them, I was like, bought the record. I was like, so excited, and I was so disappointed. And so, what do you feel that you did in there, or what did your producers do that was able to kind of capture the live sound besides just tracking live?
I mean, Ayad's great at just like sound in general, and his energy in the studio really like encourages us to go a little crazier.
Yeah.
I mean, like when I was recording vocals, I was like jumping around the room as I would live. So instead of having like a mic in front of me, he was like, you have to have a handheld mic. And so I had a handheld mic and was just jumping around. So it was very much like as we do live.
Yeah.
So that really helped to kind of get in the same.
He also made us play songs faster, just for the hell of it. He was like, you're going to play this faster whether you like it or not.
Just for fun.
And no, then we'd get amped up, and it would like reflect in the sound, which I thought was cool.
They also mix and produced in lab coats.
Yeah, that was...
No way.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah.
How professional lab coat are we talking about here?
They look like...
Very. Like it was very scientific. Surgery.
Pristine. Yeah.
Like we're here to take a specimen.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'll take that appendix if you don't need it.
Do they have their names on the lab coats?
That's a good question.
No, but that would be a nice Christmas present to them.
Yeah, that's like the touch.
Yeah, totally.
They should turn this off now or stop listening so we can all surprise them.
Noted.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us?
Our first single.
Oh. Do tell.
So, back in January, we only had one song as a band, but we knew it was like the beginning of something.
Did you, when you wrote that first song, I mean, from time to time, bands will be like, they'll just write that first song, like, yeah, this is something. Did it come from the rift, or did it have to get all put together for you to know, or, like, was it Love at First Rift?
That one was pretty much, Love at First Rift. It was totally spontaneous, actually. Like, it wasn't like someone came to this, like, practice or something and brought it. Me, Micah, and Bill just got really drunk and then just wrote that thing, like, randomly.
And then Amelia came in,
unprepared, and, like, wrote it all randomly.
I don't know what the words even were coming out of my mouth, and they just came out, and then that was a song.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the first song we ever wrote, so that was super spontaneous.
Perfect. What's it called?
Guts.
Guts. All right, here we go. Guts, live on Snacky Tunes.
Why it took
You guys just put out another single called Kiss on Glassnote, which is super rad. How did that come about? And it's a really amazing comp as well for emerging NYC bands, right?
Oh my god, I love that comp. I love so many of those bands. Petite League, Your Dog, Plain Thick. Dog, yeah. Thick.
Your Dog and Plain Dog?
Yeah.
Two Dogs.
Oh,
bands.
Thick.
Two Dogs. Yeah. Thick is rad.
Annie Hart, who was on right before, was like, you have to get Thick on.
Yeah, they're
yeah. Yeah, they're awesome. They're good friends of ours.
Oh.
Yeah, that's dope.
We'll trade emails.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. How did that come about, or how did you get approached by Glassnote for it?
A super shady Facebook message.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a scam, you know? It's like you Nigerian send a, prince like emails
you. Send us one
you.
Song.
Yeah.
We'll give you record contract.
Yeah.
What was so shady about it?
I don't know. You know, most of your Facebook messages are like usually a lot of spam anyways.
Right.
So,
Also, like hitting up through Facebook, like I definitely found you guys through email, and I also know you, but like email better than Facebook?
Yeah, that too. It's like it's not like we're hiding our email address. So
you actually wouldn't believe how many bands make it really difficult to get a hold of them.
Yeah.
That should not make it so difficult. As a word of advice,
bands in nature just don't know to check
right
emails and correspondence.
Yeah, fair point. So how did it come about, and you know, was it a song that you had on hold, or did you record it specifically for the comp?
Well, I mean, we had it in our live set, but we hadn't really recorded it yet, so this was a perfect opportunity to give him something that wasn't on the EP.
Yeah, basically we were considering putting something from the EP on it, but just given like the timeline and stuff, we ended up just deciding like we wanted to put this out anyways, and it seemed like a good standalone single, so like a couple days before it was like due, we just like went into the studio one night and just like played till like 3 a.m. and like tracked it.
Yeah.
All in one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Perfect. And speaking of more recording, you're working on a full length that's going to come out maybe end of this year, early next year?
Definitely next year.
Next year.
We're still writing.
Still writing. And what's the process? Is it still just like riff, or is it like evolved from the EP, or especially, I know you work a lot of your stuff into your live sets as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we're starting to like actually create like more cohesion around like what we're doing and make it a little bit slightly more conceptual. I mean, as you can't like as much as you can be for a punk band.
Yeah. I think we've realized that like the post-punk thing is a good fit for us sometimes, like going between hardcore, post-punk, a little bit of like,
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with a little melody.
Yeah.
It's like
find the common ground between. Yeah.
We're kind of trying to progress a little bit too with our sound. Like even though it's obviously we only have been around for a short amount of time, but like, evolving from like that starting point we were talking about and kind of integrating some other influences too, like maybe like more post-punk stuff, like Sonic Youth and like
a song in the works that's got like a television vibe, and then it gets really fast.
Yeah.
And also the more we write, I feel more inspired to go to other shows and to then get even further inspired by other bands that are playing and come back to the practice space and try out new things. And it's just really enjoyable being in this band.
Oh, a little love fest. I mean, it's also great just to be influenced by your peers. I mean, that was so great about the late 70s in New York City, is that they were all just watching each other and then super into each other and then trying to not beat each other or best each other, but a healthy competition.
Like, everyone was so creative and experimental. They were like, there's no limits. Let's just do what we feel is right.
Yeah, we'll just make something new.
Yeah.
Like, we like that. We'll just do something else.
And then it became formulaic later on. But
And then you gotta break the mold.
Yeah.
Yeah, then we'll go pop.
Yeah.
Sure.
We probably will.
You have a few shows coming up too. Some of them are super exciting.
Yeah. We got a Rough Trade Monogold release on Saturday the 23rd. Then Bill and Dan.
Playing with the Vibrators.
Yeah, I mean, are you dying a little bit inside?
Yeah,
we grew up
listening to those guys. You know, teenage, like, 70s punk favorites.
Will you be on the side of the stage or in the pit?
I don't know if the Vibrators can have much.
Yeah,
of a
I think they're a little too power poppy for a pit, especially for how many, I'm guessing, like, older people will be there too. But
you never know. It could be like the one night
I might throw my bra on stage.
Oh, okay. But you never know. It could be the night that like dad gets back in there.
Oh,
yeah,
I hope
true.
So.
Yeah.
Dude, if we can win over some dads who were there back in the day, mission accomplished.
Like my cousin is definitely at Riot Fest right now, watching like Jawbreaker
and all this stuff,
and he is having his best weekend ever.
We went last year for the Misfits reunion.
Yeah,
he's just like
all dads.
Just got rid of the kids, went to Chicago, and is just living his best weekend. And we'll pull on that for many, many, many moons to come.
Nothing wrong with that.
I want to make sure we have one more song from your canon, if you will. But where can people find you, get the EP, hear new stuff?
You can get it on Bandcamp, grimstreaker.bandcamp.com. We have it on digital and then also tapes. On tape. There's about, like, we did a limited run of, like, 100, and there's a little less than, like, 40 left, so you can grab one for, like, $6.
Get on it. Love Bandcamp.
Yeah. Or just come to the show.
Oh, yeah. Even better.
Or come find us at Roberta's in 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah, even even better. Well, thank you for being on here. Big shout out to my brother out there on the West Coast. What are you going to take us out with?
A new song.
A new song.
Oh, yeah.
Babysitter.
Oh. Yeah, this one's good.
Babysitter. Well, thank you for listening, and we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.